Up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz is the August 30th edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's a two-hour edition show concerned with sort of doings around civil rights for poor people, rent control, police activity, public accountability by the city council and city council members and city council candidates and things like that, trying to cover a lot of recent stuff. But, well, for reasons I will describe, it's going to be not so hard to listen to, but probably a tough haul for me, and I hope it doesn't translate into difficulty to hear. So we'll see. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, Thursday the 30th. No phone in, but 423-4833 is a sort of a comment line you can call on, or if you want to be included in the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list, or the Free Radio Santa Cruz announcements of my the shows when I put them out. I usually kind of summarize the shows on these emails in case you want to get a kind of a quick peek, there we go, about what's coming up. You can do it that way. Give me a call at 423-4833 or send me an email at rnorse, that's R-N-O-R-S-E, rnorse3@hotmail.com. So, it's been a busy week. My ailing audio recorder is getting much more problematic, and that's why the quality of the audio you're going to be hearing may not be up to its usual low standard. And it's pretty low anyway, because I'm sort of an amateur in this issue, even though I've been doing it for so long. I don't get the big bucks for doing this kind of stuff, this kind of work. In any case, there's been numerous things happening. There was a sort of a exchange of issues on different voter initiatives, including rent control measure M, which interested me. And I guess it was the police department's community room. I think it's the Women's Democratic Club, that where they had a discussion. I don't know what their outcome was, whether they favored it or not, but and the actual debate itself, I did not get on audio, strangely enough, even though my audio was sitting right there supposedly recording, but apparently it failed the test. But I did get some different opinions on it, which you'll hear. Also, I did some recording at the Tuesday shitty council meeting, as I like to characterize our city council, or their city council, if you will. The city council had two periods that were interesting, and again, recorder problems, but I think I'll be able to get some of it, and I'll be playing some of it probably on Sunday at the longer show, which begins at 9:30, goes off until 3 in the afternoon on Free Radio Santa Cruz. But I did get some commentary from some of the folks afterward. And I thought it was quite telling. The two issues that came up were the bathrooms, which I and others have been raising along with the Conscience and Action Group, which met on Wednesday and decided to slate a protest. Tentatively scheduled for the city council meeting, or the right before the council meeting, on the 25th of, I guess it's September. I think that's the council Wednesday, or council Tuesday, I should say, that's coming up. In that month, the second council meeting of the month is every Tuesday, first and second and third second and fourth Tuesday evenings. It used to be evenings, actually. Now it's afternoons and even sometimes beginning at noon or even earlier. In any case, I'll give you more on that as it develops, because we want to double check on the times and so forth. But there was considerable sentiment to get a protest going and to get a wide variety of people, because there were far more people were interested in this than I thought. I'm used to people signing petitions or else ignoring the petitions, but we got a significant number at the Rent Control Forum about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. That was at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and then at Drew Glover's kickoff rally, which I've mentioned to you, at Loudoun-Nelson Park, Laurel Park. And then more recently at the City Council chambers itself, people who had come to talk on other issues at the oral communication period at 5:30, the teeny tidy bit that they squeeze in at the end of their, we've got an agenda and we're prepared to shove it down your throat. That oral communications period actually had people talking about bathrooms that I'd never seen before, and that had come to talk about something else, the lack of bathrooms, the closing of the Loudoun-Nelson Community Center bathroom, essentially to make it unwelcome for the homeless and to set up a do-not-disturb middle-class residents in their right to feel free from the sights and sounds of poverty in Santa Cruz. With the excuse, of course, of vandalism and expenses and so forth, none of which is proved in any significant way by the emails that Izeth Ray, the manager of the Loudoun-Nelson facility, gave me. And she actually just called me. She's a very courteous woman. She's polite. She's responsive, too. I didn't really expect a call from her today. But she called in to let me know that my complaint, which is what I went in there, and you're going to hear this shortly, and my companion who was with me, an older woman, wanted to use the bathroom, and they wouldn't let her. Was it out of order? No, I don't think. You know, was she a threat to the local population there? No. Had she caused a disturbance in the past? No, not that I know of. But, of course, they would not let her because their new policy is discriminatory and hostile towards everyone who is not using the facilities, either paying for it or part of an event that's slated there. And they have all kinds of sort of vague excuses. Oh, it's been illegal behavior. Well, you're going to hear Izeth Ray talking about this. And actually, I think I'll play that to begin with so you can get a sense of, you can judge yourself of who's in the right, who's in the wrong, or what should be done. I, of course, have pointed out time and time again that people need bathrooms. If they don't have them, they'll do what they have to do. And, I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me. But there are some folks who believe that by cutting off the most essential kinds of services, you can drive away or make disappear people you don't want to see around. And that is not unique to Santa Cruz. So let's see if you can hear this attempt to get a bathroom use at the Loudoun-Nelson Center, and I guess this happened 3 or 4 days ago.
It is August 27th, about 10:35, Loudoun-Nelson Center.
Hello.
I'm okay, a little tired and cranky. How about you?
Hi.
Tired. Looking for the code for the bathroom so we can use it.
Are you participating in the program today?
Certainly not.
Well, unfortunately, I can't give out the code unless you're participating with the program here.
And who gave you those orders?
Came from my supervisor.
What's his or her name?
Her name is Izeth Ray.
I always mispronounce it. Say it again.
Izeth Ray?
Izeth Ray.
Like Seth.
I've seen it in the emails, but I don't know how to pronounce it. Is she here?
I believe so. Would you like to speak to her?
Sure, that would be good. We're standing at the Loudoun-Nelson.
Robert Norris.
At the information board.
Sounds good.
What's your name?
My name is Emilio.
Robert Emilio.
Which of us two?
I'm afternoon.
Gloria.
Gloria. Mm-hmm. Nice to meet you as well. So what events do we have coming up that I could pretend to be a part of?
We have our bulletin board right there. It'll show you what's going on today, daily activities, and we also have a little brochure right here that also lets you know what's going on throughout the week.
That's good. That's good.
Right here available.
So where do you direct people to take a dump? On the lawn out front, or what do you suggest people do?
I wouldn't suggest that at all. I don't suggest that anyway.
No, I mean, where do you, if somebody comes in and says, I want to use the bathroom, does anybody?
I recommend the public restrooms.
Which would be?
There's one down at Depot. I know that the police department, sometimes their community room is available as well.
Do we know what the hours are? Because we tried the police community room last time without
success. I don't specifically know their hours there, but I know that the Depot Fry Park building, their bathroom's open pretty much 24/7.
It is...
Now, the depot actually is many blocks away, or a number of blocks away, so it's not an easy option. And the community bathroom, sometimes available, sometimes not. One of the questions I wished we'd asked, and perhaps we will in the future, because I've encouraged people to go down and ask to use the bathroom at the Loudoun Nelson, ask for the code, ask, you know, if you're disabled, if you're handicapped, if you're elderly, they don't care. They're just going to send you somewhere else, as though they were a private business instead of a taxpayer-funded community center.
Sunrise to sunset.
Yeah. Hello. Hey, Azeth, I'm Robert.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I've read many of your emails.
Okay.
So we'd like to use a bathroom. She has to use a bathroom. I'd like to get the code to go in.
Okay, are you attending a class or a program with us today? Okay, and unfortunately our restrooms are closed to the public right now.
Why is that?
Due to illegal activity and unfortunate circumstances that have led to us making that decision.
Do I look like I'm going to vandalize your bathroom?
Certainly not. I don't make that judgment about anyone.
See, I used to come in here to use the bathroom often. So I needed, you know, when I was over here, because of that, and was in this world, this one was available.
I'm going to pause briefly to point out that both the worker behind the counter and Izeth, who came out to talk to us, stated, are you using the Loudoun Nelson today? And I think one possible answer for those people who just don't want to crap in their pants and who need to use the bathroom, or who feel this is outrageous and want to use it just as a matter of course, is later in the afternoon, I believe I'll be attending something, and you can ask what events are happening, and then say, I may be attending something later today. I'm not sure. I think it may well be the case. And if that's that's going to be an option for me, and see if they still attempt to stop you from using the Loudoun Nelson bathroom. And you might say, well, what's the problem? Go to some other bathroom. Why make a big deal of this? For me, the issue is that this is a part of a general plan to exclude a certain group of people and to privatize public facilities. I don't like it. I don't support it. And I think it's a menace to the general community. It certainly is a menace to poor people, an attempt to exclude them and drive them, essentially drive them out of the city in the sense that it makes it far more difficult for them to just be a part of the general community life as this happens. So let's hear a little more.
It's really weird that they're being closed to the public.
It is an unfortunate circumstance. I do have a list of other open available public restrooms if you'd like to look at that and can point you in the direction of some.
It's not an unfortunate circumstance. It is a conscious decision made by Izeth Ray. A conscious decision made by her and she later explains a number of people together. But if you look at her emails, she is the one who's been pressing the issue in terms of concerns about people camping in the Laurel Park, a desire for a wrought iron fence. I don't know, actually, or certainly no objections to any of this. And she is the responsible party, at least the top of the little pyramid down there at Loudoun Nelson.
It is...
that they're being closed to the public.
It is an unfortunate circumstance. I do have a list of other open available public restrooms if you'd like to look at that and can point you in the direction of some. We actually have one, the PD restroom is usually open, and we can actually check the schedule for you to see if that's not the case. Sometimes it's closed if they have certain trainings happening.
How frequently are they open?
I think that's usually the case that they're open.
Now the question to answer or ask here is and get answered is, well, if it's not open, will you let us use the bathroom down the hall, please? And, of course, it's always, you think afterward of questions you should have asked and maybe will in the future. Also, the other bathrooms I've mentioned before are quite a distance away. And if you're elderly or disabled or, you know, ill, it's not going to be easy for you to deal with. And it's, as one of our conscience and action speakers, Phil Posner, put it, it creates suffering. Not if you're an upper-middle-class person who has money to go to a cafe nearby. Even if you are, you know, can hold your water long enough to get to the metro, they may be closed for cleaning. Because that happens with, I don't know, maybe we should say reassuring regularity, but I don't know how reassuring it is when you need to use one and it's not there.
If they have certain types of trainings in the building that involve youth, then they'll close.
Is that frequent?
She's talking about the
police
department.
I'm not sure of the frequency, but we can take a look at their calendar and see if it's open.
I'd be curious for the next week what the story is with that, if you have that.
For PD?
Yeah.
You can imagine hopping from leg to leg while with a bathroom essentially 100 feet away or less. You're told that they're going to check the schedule of the bathroom next door to see if they're open. It's really kind of a grotesque, Kafkaesque situation, but one which sort of demonstrates the power of some governmental authorities to misuse public funding and public power on behalf of a rather narrow and, I think, bigoted agenda. And I don't like it. I hope you don't either.
Because it's the nearest bathroom.
I believe that the laundromat has an open restroom, and possibly La Hacienda as well.
Really?
And then we also have the restrooms at Depot Park.
So she's talking about, again, a bathroom a block away, which certainly is closer than the Depot Park, which is three blocks or long blocks away. I don't know how many blocks, but it's a very long block. There isn't much in the way of street divisions along Center Street up in that direction. But I don't know that the Ultramat will necessarily let you use its bathroom unless you're a customer, and even then you may find it out of order. No idea about the market across the street that she talks about, but the notion of requiring the public to go to put a burden on private businesses and also to essentially... it's essentially a way of saying, don't even ask us again sort of thing unless you are a part of the select group that's using a particular event here, even though, as I said, you're paying taxpayer dollars for this thing, and it's always been a Santa Cruz tradition to have this place open.
Again, your name is...
And right now they're looking to see if
the calendars.
See if they can find the actual bathroom hours of the police station or the actual open hours of the police station. It goes without saying that not all homeless people are comfortable or poor people going into the police station. Maybe they have a warrant for sleeping or a failure to pay, you know, which is a frequent occurrence.
Depending on what we find out here online.
Do you have another picture? Morning. So I believe there's nothing that I'm seeing that would indicate that their restrooms would be closed today.
Wait.
I did speak over at PD.
Is that just
I did speak with the one of the schedulers, and they said it is usually only if they have like a teen academy or a PD training.
You know what their hours are at the police station?
their business hours?
Because that's, you can't, presume you can't get in until closed.
I believe it's 8 to 5. I'm not
8 to 5. Maybe 8 to 4. I'm not sure either. So, who made the decision to close the bathrooms here? You know?
It was a collective decision. I mean, basically, it was made by the director. The
director is?
At the time, was Mauro Garcia.
So, he in March, he was the director. I guess it was the end of February it was closed. Was this done primarily on your recommendation, or was it done, he took the initiative after having, you know, received information and concerns from you?
That's true, yes.
You know, got a complaint form, because that's what I want to fill out.
A complaint form?
Yeah, the bathroom should be open. We need to use them, so do others.
And I should point out that it, for those who are making inquiries of Izeth Ray or one of her subordinates there, if you're asking a question like, you know, who made this decision, don't let her off the hook like I just did by saying, or did you do it after consultation? You don't want to provide her with an opportunity. If she made the decision or she didn't make the decision, then give her the opportunity, in fact, the responsibility of saying, I didn't make that decision, someone else did. Or I was instrumental, and I joined in that decision, or I supported that decision, or I didn't support it. That's what you want to get, because I believe the people who make these decisions have to be held accountable for the decisions by the public. And sometimes ordinary channels of complaint, which we're trying to use here with a sort of a written form which I left, and which she called me back again early this afternoon, as I mentioned, though without any indication there was a change in policy. Ordinary channels of complaint often don't work. If there's a sort of insulated, buffered sort of backroom group that makes these decisions, that out of sight, without public input, without public voter discussion, without consideration of the implications this has for people who need this, without considering alternative facilities and making them available. So it's often important to really hold folks accountable who are doing this kind of thing by name, by position, in person, in front, and I would say even sometimes loudly and clearly and persistently, because they have to know they can use the bathrooms anytime they want, and they're comfortable all day in that regard. The fact that they are letting other people suffer in discomfort, and often it can produce public health consequences too, both to the individuals who aren't allowed to use the restrooms and to the rest of the community that has to deal with people who can't use sanitary facilities in a sanitary way and so have to do sort of more improvised activity that leaves debris, shit and piss wherever they happen to have to be. I'm saying the obvious again. But the obvious apparently isn't clear enough for these folks unless it's, should we say, I was going to say shoved in their face, or at least made very clear to them.
Does anything pop into mind, Sherry?
I'm going to look really quick.
Yeah, I think right now they're looking for forms for me to fill out.
So when does the schedule go up here? Because I see there's only one. Is that the only event today?
Our weekly schedule?
Yeah.
You can turn around and
look
right now.
Just one up.
Excuse me, that's the daily schedule, and then we have a printout of our weekly schedule.
Now, the point here is there's a neon kind of display on the wall which gives you the schedule of events. It didn't when I came in, but then apparently it did. Maybe it kind of flashes on and off. It seems to me that, you know, you could easily say you can name an event and say that's an event I will be attending. You can always change your mind, say I've decided not to attend it. You didn't have to plan to attend it when you walked in and were suddenly, you know, aware that you had to use a bathroom and they weren't going to let you use one unless you're claiming to be part of an event. Now, I'm curious, and this is something I haven't found out, whether they will require documentation that you're part of an event. That will be an interesting thing to find out, and perhaps we will do that in the times ahead.
if you want to do a handwritten.
Who should I address the email to? Iseth?
You can start with me if you want.
Iseth, my proper.
Iseth.
Hungarian, perhaps?
No. It's a combination name.
Oh, really?
It's a villain, Elizabeth.
Oh, I see. Did you create it yourself?
No.
You're stuck with it.
I'm not stuck with it. I feel blessed to have it.
All right, so I have your email, I think. Should it be sent to you or should it be sent to someone else? What's your thought on that?
I'm the supervisor, so you can send it to me, and if I feel I need to share it, I can.
Who do you answer to?
Right now, my direct supervisor is Rachel Kaufman. She's the recreation superintendent interim, and if it goes up beyond that, it's Carol Spurridge, the director interim.
And Rachel Kaufman's email is rkaufman@cityofsantacruz.org. Oh boy, let me double check on that one. It's .com, not .org. So it's rkaufman@cityofsantacruz.com. Similarly, it's Isbeth Ray. But these emails, you know, these complaints, which I'm encouraging people to do because it's a proper form to follow, I think a much more effective approach is to join protests that are happening around this issue and find creative ways of essentially creating public pressure on this issue. I mean, there's no reason why the city with millions of dollars to spend can't keep bathrooms open. It's an example of some sort of, to me, petty surrender to a group that wants to make sure that homeless people are discouraged, and if not discouraged, severely contained. And it's primarily, I think, about homeless people. It's not about the real comparative costs of keeping bathrooms open versus shutting them down, because if you close them, you have to clean up the mess that happens outside. I mean, again, must I say any of this again and again? I think I'm going to leave it there with this particular recording. You know, there's more of kind of details of my, you know, getting a. They don't really have a complaint form. They have a form about how has your experience been at Loudoun Nelson with a particular event. Not, you know, did you develop hemorrhoids because they wouldn't let you use the bathroom here, or have a you know, a hysterical fit of rage because of that, which creates a lot of frustration and a lot of unnecessary hostility. And it's more important, it's an action that is part of a general bad, darkening policy here in Santa Cruz. Let's take a musical break to throw a little lightness into the scene.
We are back, and I'm joined now by a very special guest, the President of the United States. Are we still going with that title? Yes? They're telling me yes? Okay, still good. Welcome, Mr. President. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you must be very busy cleaning out your desk. It has been quite a dramatic news week for you.
They make up lies. I've seen it many times. They make up things.
I mean, two former employees convicted, one implicating you as a co-conspirator in his crimes, a public feud with your attorney general, friends and allies, even doormen flipping on you left and right.
I know all about flipping. For 30, 40 years, I've been watching Flippers.
Such a good show.
Look, I didn't know Manafort well. He wasn't with the campaign long.
Well, then why don't we start with your former attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen?
I always found him to be a nice guy.
Were you aware of the hush money payments he is now saying were financed by the campaign per your instruction?
They didn't come out of the campaign. They came from me, and I tweeted about it. You know, I don't know if you know, but I tweeted about the payments. But they didn't come out of campaign.
Did they come out of the campaign?
They didn't come out of the campaign, and that's big.
Huge.
Because that could be...
Illegal?
A little dicey.
Or illegal.
But they weren't... It's not even a campaign violation. If you look at President Obama, he had a massive...
Pecker. David Pecker, your friend and CEO of the National Enquirer, has recently been granted immunity in the Cohen investigation and is said to have a lot of dirt on you.
I don't know. I've always had controversy in my life, and I've always succeeded. I've always won.
Well, some say you're about to win, most likely to get impeached.
I'll tell you what. If I ever got impeached, I think the market would crash.
If you ever got impeached?
I think everybody would be very poor.
Why, if you ever got impeached, you would
You would probably start crying, then rehash all the lying and rhetoric you've preached. All the Dems would be smirking. Jim Acosta would start twerking if you ever got impeached.
If I ever got impeached...
You could just give in to Mueller, then go and get some color by lying on a beach. This is all natural, right? With the crimes you've been fixing, you could be another Nixon if you only got impeached.
I think the market would crash.
You'd be through and take with you our worries and our strife. You'd return to only burdening your wife, and we'd resume a normal life. Find a lawyer, cause you'll need one. Write a book, or learn to read one, or get your eyebrows bleached, cause... Just relax at the spa, go fuck yourself at Mar-a-Lago when you, if you get impeached.
I don't know how you can impeach somebody who's done a great job.
You'd be more than implicated for laws you violated and protocols you breached.
Because without this thinking...
We could finally all stop drinking if you ever got impeached.
I think everybody would be very poor.
We would dance and sing and revel. No one else has hit the level of infamy you've reached. Giuliani could retire. Pence could join a gay men's choir if you ever get impeached.
The president did nothing wrong.
When you flee, take Huckabee. And finally I'll become. I'd ask Michael Avenatti to the prom. And Kellyanne could move to Guam. More than half the country's waiting. So think about the ratings. Cause when you gave your speech, we would all tune in to listen. You could finally go to prison.
I'm not involved. I wasn't charged with anything.
If you ever got impeached.
I think everybody would be very poor.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
So I'm on the line with Brent, and this is Brent Adams of the Warming Center and numerous other programs. It's mid-afternoon on Thursday. And Brent, you and I last saw each other at the city council meeting on Tuesday when they kicked down, at least they anticipated getting a lot of money for... homeless services, and there was some, you know, concerns about the closing of the River Street campground from the people who are in the campground. Of course, actually, it's the expansion and extension of the River Street campground, or the barbed wire campground, as I call it, which nonetheless is better than a lot of the other shelters, but rather expensive. You had some rather strong comments to make, not just about city council, but also about activists who you felt were focusing on the wrong issue. A lot of us talked about the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, myself included. Fire away, old man.
Yeah, well, what's true is going into that meeting, I don't think any of us knew really what they were going to be proposing and voting on. So my initial critique about the activists focusing on bathrooms, well, that's an issue that I've been championing for several years, to the point of cleaning, poop up porta potties for an entire summer myself. What's up and what has been revealed is, what is the plan for $30 million in the near future in the county around homelessness? But what the immediate question was, what are they going to do for winter shelter? And I saw that there was plenty of discussion during public comments about it. And then Chris Krohn reached into the deliberation of this, the motion on Tuesday, which had everything to do with what they're doing. They're not going to do the interim shelter for a while. They're not going to be funding the classic winter shelter they have for umpteen years. And they're extending the $1 million tent camp out to a full year, to April. And so when that had been aired in that room, talking about bathrooms was not the topic that we should have been freaking out about. The fact that they proposed they're going to dump 60 people, 60 beds from shelter. 20 of those go to a tent camp. That has nothing to do with an emergency drop-in camp. That's not emergency shelter. Poly Loft additionally is not going to be an emergency shelter. So There will be no emergency shelter funded by the city. I'm just putting that out there. And it falls back on me personally as director of the Warming Center program. So when the classic activists are in the room at that point, continuing to talk about bathrooms, yeah, that's when the red light went off. And it took me a full 24 hours to process the information before I sent out an email to you all last night saying, I think you missed the boat. When you look at my video comment, I also kind of missed the boat because we should have been talking about that the city is, while they're waiting for the massive, supermassive money cannon to show up, they're going to drop the ball on protecting people in the winter. And so that really, to my mind, shows their hand about what's really valuable. They're not really protecting people who need shelter in the wintertime. They didn't bring Warming Center in to talk about it. I think any systems engineer would say you have to have Warming Center in this room because we're talking about, you know, what are we going to do about the people who sleep outside during the winter? Well, Warming Center always has to be at that table, regardless of whether the director's an asshole or not. Anyway.
Wait, no, and, hold it. Let's not berate ourselves. But, I mean, I think we've always known for no, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think we should. But we've known for years that the city council, its interest in homelessness is obviously pro forma to me, and, you know, kind of a fig leaf stuff. Because, you know, the vast majority of people, even when there is a so-called winter shelter, provides, as you pointed out, and I know you've been trying to be cautious and not be critical of the winter shelter, but, you know, searches and people getting ill there. I had an interview yesterday with someone, a couple that mentioned almost everybody was getting sick at the winter shelter.
It's hard. At some point, it's hard not to. When you get, you know, when you have an introduction of extremely sick person, and it, you know, we have a cleaning protocol. They've never shown us a printed version of the cleaning protocol. So that's something we should always be challenging with or something. What's your protocol? Warming Center, it makes it a lot easier because we're open infrequently, so people don't get sick in the same manner. But, I mean, if you had 100 people at your house every single night who normally sleep out, you would probably have a rash of sickness too.
Have you had that experience at the Warming Center when a lot of people got sick in any one particular night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of the volunteers get sick. People come in. You're handling the same doorknobs. You can't disinfect the doorknob after every single use. So, and it's actually inappropriate to, you know, disinfect everything you touch prior to touching it. We wear gloves. But at some point, you know, it's in the air. You have 80 people sleeping on the floor in a closed space because it's very cold out. You're going to have some cross-pollination of bacteria or whatever, you know, a bug. It's going to happen. Our bigger concern at some point is not so much with general winter sickness and flu. It becomes more towards bed bugs and scabies and other transferables like that, which are can be much more harmful.
Well, I think there are two points that I noted, and I said them both in a rather clumsy and rushed fashion in the 2 minutes they allowed us, which is ridiculous, of course, as usual.
Yeah, you can't get a coherent thought out in 2 minutes.
No, I mean, I mentioned, as you said, when they revealed that they're obviously going to be providing, you know, essentially not just less, but zero winter shelter, a winter drop-in emergency shelter. I made that comment as a part of my kind of sputtering about the issue when I got up there to the mic. Not very coherently, I have to say, you know. But even if they had winter shelter, as they do every winter, as you and I think, and almost every other homeless advocate around, has said, it's a drop in the bucket. It's a small example. I mean, even for a model project like a sanctuary village, you know, it's the beginning, but it doesn't deal with the emergency encampments that you spend time documenting, communicating with, and trying to provide some assistance for when you get some calls at the Warming Center number.
Well, you have the luxury of speaking about that in broad terms. I would say I have two voices here. One is director of the Warming Center saying that we just demand that the winter shelter, as tradition, is reinstated, and we will be happy with that. The other voice would say, oh, no, we are far more visionary than these. We actually demand that every single person be provided clean, safe, dignifying shelter immediately. And we know it can happen at much reduced cost than we're already spending, because we can demonstrate that in many other cities when we take a look at what they're spending and the number of people they're sheltering. So I have two voices on that matter.
Run the community, or the audience who's listening, I should say, through kind of very, you know, slowly and carefully the exact appropriations that we're talking about and the numbers involved, because you mentioned it and I've kind of, you know, referred to it, but people, I think, are not really aware of the actual situation that's coming down, because as you said, it was only really clearly revealed insofar as it's actually going to be carried out on Tuesday night or Tuesday afternoon.
They've made it vague. We're not quite sure where money is coming from, where it's going to. Obviously, HSC is going to get some money. We don't know. They didn't talk about expanding. They didn't talk about any budgetary aspect of the tent encampment at all. They just said they're going to be extending it beyond, and I think it's no longer the from the Scott, salary, that the assistant city manager who left. They're drawing it from his
Scott
unused
Collins.
Salary, and then Collins, and then because they had declared a shelter emergency, and then they were able to draw the money from the general fund, and they said they only had 3 months. The county paid for the fourth month, and then they said after that that'll be it. And then they extended it all the way out to October 1st or September 1st. And now they're here saying they're going to extend it all the way out to April without really talking about where the money comes from now. We assume it's the general fund, though.
But the money, I guess we're talking about two large appropriations. One's a bond issue for...
Oh, you're talking about that. I see. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the $30 million that we're referring to? Two different.
Yeah. No. None of the money for the camp and the money they're giving to HSC doesn't come out of this at all. I think they're dedicating this $100,000 per month for the tent camp, and so they don't have any money left for winter shelter. We realize that. The plan was that they were going to deconstruct the tent encampment, and then thereby reinstating a shelter, winter shelter, and or leading toward interim shelter. And then the HSC, we assumed that, you know, they're going to get a quarter
Coral Street,
of this money.
For those who don't know. That's the current homeless, I call it the homeless lack of
services. Yeah, but then you're talking about some SB2 funds, then you're talking about this other thing, I don't know what it's called. It's HEAP, it's the acronym is HEAP, H-E-A-P. It's a total of $31 million coming into the county, 9.6 estimated for the city, 21 or something like that for the county. I don't think my math is good there, but and so they're what we see them doing is much like the ocean tide. They're rolling back, they're pulling back into the ocean, leaving everybody to sleep outside. Sorry for the weird metaphors. Only to wait for that huge tidal wave to come in with all this money is going to be showing up. And it's not earmarked specifically for shelter. It's going to be for all kinds of different things, which let me assert only in this space, Robert, that becomes frightening, because everyone's going to have their hand in that pot, believe me. And I'm going to try to get a toe in there, too. As the director, I have to try to find a way to have that directed. It's not just for shelter, even though Watsonville did what Santa Cruz did in May. Watsonville did that last Tuesday. They declared a shelter emergency, not a homelessness crisis emergency. So what they're able to do is, so the money's coming in. I don't know what to say about it.
Let me interrupt you for a minute here, Brent, because I'm curious about two things. First of all, the difference between if there is such a thing, between a shelter emergency and a homeless crisis emergency? And then secondly, when did Santa Cruz declare this latest shelter emergency? Do you remember?
So they refused to do it in the 20 recommendations process in April. They said, we will not be declaring a homeless emergency. And then new police chief, new rhetoric, new camping in San Lorenzo Park. And then all of a sudden they came out stating that they're declaring a homeless shelter crisis.
Remember what month that was?
May. At least according to their, I think it was only a month after the 20 recommendations in I believe it was April. I could be wrong.
May of last year, you mean?
May of last year, yeah.
Okay.
Then they immediately said, and then a few months later, several months later, they're beginning to, they said they were not going to do any camping either, no camps. That's why they said they would not talk to us about the transitional camp paradigm all over the Northwest. They couldn't even entertain a conversation. We identified that location where the current River Street camp is, and they said, definitely no, we will never have a camp there. Then, of course, they designed their own camp, and it's the worst design that the country has ever seen, $2,000 per month per tent. That design is atrocious. That they would be extending that camp perpetually, I don't know why people aren't freaking out, pissed off about it.
Also, there's a matter of crowding that camp residents themselves have talked about.
Spending all the money for a handful of people, and Rochelle Narayan was the only person who had anything constructive to ask, which is, are we not going to make sure we put a priority on Santa Cruz homelessness? Now, I'm not somebody saying that people who arrive here don't have a benefit to shelters and access to programs, but if you're spending that much money and you haven't decided that you're spending it to alleviate the current homelessness condition, and Tina Scholl said, oh, no, that comes into some sort of legality around, what's the term, what's the legal term?
It's equal treatment or lack of discrimination.
Yeah, which it shows their lack of savvy. They haven't looked outside of the county. They haven't, you know, up in Eugene and Seattle and Portland, there are dozens of these programs. I say dozens. And they all have a filtered several-tier entrance intake policy that people from the community have a first dibs, and then people who've been here for a number of years have second dibs, and if there's any extra bedding, then other people get to come in too, and everyone eventually gets served.
Now, Brent, getting back to the question that I had you, though, because I'm interested in what you're saying as well.
What did you say?
The question was, is there a difference between a shelter emergency and a and a homeless
a shelter emergency is something that Sacramento, Seattle, and Portland and L.A. had done, and that allows the city to take drastic measures. For instance, and you'll love this, suspend the camping ban, legally suspend it. Not change it, not take it off the books, but completely suspend it. They're not able to enforce it anymore. Then they can earmark drastically general funds for all kinds of different types of programs, and they're able to entertain things like tent camps, entertain nonprofit ideas and field different proposals from different nonprofits within the area that are already working on homelessness. The city, right now, you see the city, it's so inappropriate that the city is designing and organizing any of this stuff because they don't have a history, they don't have an eye for it, they're not researching what exists elsewhere. So when we talk about a homelessness state of emergency, it just says we're throwing up our hands, we don't know what the fuck to do. We were calling an emergency, and that enables them to do things, outside of the city charter or the normal process. It's outside of the normal budgetary process. So when the city declares in a different way a shelter crisis, that means they're only going to earmark these programs, not for the storage program, not for other creative ways, but only ways that they deem, and they will direct the money into. What it is mainly political. What they do is they create this sort of, they have these recommendations, and then they declare their shelter crisis emergency, and then they open up a tent camp for $100,000 a month, and then they're able to like show you how they arrived at that. There were recommendations, there was a decision. Now, even right now, if you got the paper copy of the thing you demanded at City Council the other day, or you look at, which was a paper version of what was up on the screen,
right,
you can see how they create the legitimacy of the asinine shit they're doing right now by showing, way back in May, they started this process forward, and even though they're not going to be providing interim shelter and having any idea what that even means, let alone the described navigation center that's out there 3 or 5 years in the future, but they haven't, somehow they were able to, that they're pushing the tent camp back, even though they said they would never, ever, ever do that.
They also, right? As I recall, they planted that tent camp on a space that you were originally contracted to use for storage during last winter.
Yeah, that would be, so we don't care. We've been running a storage program for 3 months. The city has not even acknowledged that in the least bit to this to date. I did meet with Susie O'Hara. Maybe we talked about that already last week. And I have good news. We're moving into did we talk about this already? I think we did. We're moving into a fixed location yet to be announced, very near to the nexus of homelessness in Santa Cruz, close to St. Francis Food Kitchen and the Homeless Services Center along the levee. And we'll be announcing that, I think, September 1st.
That's day after tomorrow.
Yeah, likely. So it'll probably be Monday. We'll do a press release.
So, is this has the number of people in using storage or trying to use storage exceeded your capacity yet? And do you think it's likely to?
Yeah, we thought we had an 80-person capacity because that's the peak number of bins we could fit in our transportable storage device. And then we decided to open up a backup storage unit and then have people who didn't access their bins within the last 30 days, we would move those bins to hard storage. Then we were able to offer an additional bin or two for people who have extra stuff and have allowing to have one bin on board and two bins at the hard storage location. Hard storage means they don't get access to it on the daily. They have to check it out, and it'll show up a day or two later. But we've been able to maximize the portable storage facility by constantly shifting things off and only having those people who are either recently signed up or who access the thing, you know, usually on the weekly or the daily. And so it's been effective. We are close approaching 150 users of the program right now.
How many people currently have stuff in storage with you?
Over 100.
And how many do you anticipate as the winter approaches?
With our current facility, we're going to try to cap it at about 250 maximum. And then we can open up an additional storage. We're not, as you know, this is what we call good design. We say good design for programs means there's no population cap. We're not trying to say we want infinity of people to arrive at Santa Cruz and use our program. We're just saying that no matter how many people need to use it, we'll accommodate them. That's good design. That's what we demand of city government-funded programs. Good design, bad design is you take all the money and only serve 50 people like we see them doing. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, I think you did. I noticed that the people who, some of the people who came to the city council meeting had, I guess, their concerns met insofar as they were residents of the River Street campground, and they wanted to make sure it wasn't going to be shut down as they feared it was. I think somebody came to the Red Church Swami, the guy who's a joyful heart, as he calls himself, announced, that there was, I think he wanted people to come to city council and say, save the shape of the program.
Well, you might well recognize that.
But let me give you my question. My question is, in your conversations with people in the last couple of days, what's been the general reaction of the homeless community and service providers? Are they, we're so glad the council's, got a lot of money for the homeless and is keeping this, adding a few more beds and a few more tents? Or is there a concern such as you've expressed?
No. What I discovered was virtually nobody but you and I knew what happened in city council chambers. Even Chris Clone seems confused about what he voted unanimously on. I challenged him. I said, do you know that they reduced winter shelter capacity by 60-plus beds? And his report was, we don't have enough votes to fight this thing, which means if he can't vote on a winning ticket, he will vote with the majority. We need to reanalyze that concept. That's the beauty of Micah Posner, that Micah voted 6-1 every time, and on a good day, 6-2. I'm 5-2, if you recall. And we always thought that was powerless, that he didn't have any ability to build consensus. But now we realize that single vote means everything. That's a dissenting vote.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you to the concept. I've always told these council members.
I ran away with that theme. Sorry.
I think you're wrong. I think that actually Crone recently has been more on the 6-1 side of a lot of issues. And even in when Sandy Brown went along with stuff, and often Posner was not voting for ridiculous crap in the parks and other things. Although occasionally he was 61.
I'm saying I think that Chris Crone is in line is not. If he knew really what he voted on, he would be patently against it. But he just didn't make himself. If you recall, his deliberation remarks were exclusively about the bathroom thing, which had nothing to do with the vote. So he had his head. He wasn't paying attention. Voted unanimously, and when I challenged him later, said, "We don't have the vote to fight these things."
That's a standard Crone response. That's what he's always.
He voted blindly, yeah. And Sandy Brown never looked up from whatever she was working on.
Yeah, I mean,
she didn't say a peep in the entire deliberation. What kind of a progressive candidate is that?
Well, you don't have to ask me. I can tell you. Sandy. I actually attended the Sandy Brown Chris Crone Monday meeting. You might be interested in that. They usually do it at the Coffee Roasting Company the Monday before the Tuesday City Council meeting.
I'm not aware of that.
Yeah. Well, there's I keep trying to get them to make it public, but they don't seem to make it too public.
And where is she sitting?
We were all sitting. All four of us were sitting at 9 o'clock. Though they said they were going to start at 8, they started at 9. Over in the corner, if you walk in, it's to the left in the coffee roasting bagelry. Bagelry downtown.
Oh, bagelry.
Yeah, not the coffee roasting company. Sorry.
Gotcha. Bagelry.
So I mean,
a little too early for me, but I'll try to make it.
They'll be hearing much of what you say, but I actually recorded everything that we talked about, and if I had better equipment, I may be playing it on Sunday. So if you get bored, check it out. Let me ask you a few more questions, though, regarding issues that you may not have been able to cover much of because you've been preoccupied with these other things, storage, and then the latest shelter boondoggle or a weirdness. Really more of the same, frankly, as far as I can see. But regarding people who are actually outside, the real people who form the majority of homeless in Santa Cruz, any connections, any comments on what's happening out there?
Like I said, I think I told you last Sunday, I'm not doing a lot of footwork right now. I have 2 grants to write. We're planning a storage program dinner theater fundraiser, which I'm writing the theater play, believe it or not. We're moving from one location to another. We're moving from boxes into a 4-suite unit along the levee. So I have not been doing a lot of street outreach. What does happen, though, is I can report this. I still staff the homeless emergency hotline, which is 234-9848. We're talking on it now. And so people call me on this line. And so what happens is, a woman has been put out of a local shelter because of some dramatic thing that was not true. So she's sleeping outside with all of her stuff. She's getting she's putting some money together and getting a car. She's put 4 bins on the storage program. But recognizing the increased hardship, a lack of space for women in particular. We see a lot of women outside. But this August, end of August, historically we see lots of people we've never seen before outside. We see people congregating in little cliques, a lot of drug use in these cliques, and then a lot more tent camping always pops up. We're seeing that again along Highway 1 and in various areas. It's cyclical, and right now, since I don't have any real reports from the street, we're seeing just a general high tide in this moment, like we tend to. With a great, sorry for me to lapse back on the storage program, what we're seeing also is lots of people not having to carry their stuff around. The storage program is highly successful in the fact that with 100 people with their stuff on board, that's 100 times 20 gallons of material that's not on the street, and people have better gear, redundant gear, and they're able to organize their lives in a much better fashion than they had been before.
It looks like it's true, of course. It looks like the safe parking program that I guess you and I had both been concerned was being put on the back burner because of no funding by the Association of Faith Communities, is now likely to, it's become a part of the city's funding plan for people, what, 50 spaces or 40 spaces, some such, for people to park out there, but not, to, of course, for the ordinary homeless person to be able to go set up a tent, right?
Right. It's funny that it's put in with the shelter reduction plan, because it has nothing to do with, it's not the same population whatsoever. Now, that is an important thing, and it should be done, it should have been done, it should have been funded by the city. Now the city's, we have no idea if they're going to fund it, what that means. I'm seeing the board of AFC in City Hall, meeting with government officials there. But we have no idea what that means. But what I would like to highlight relating to that is what's more true is if you're going to have a shelter crisis emergency and you're looking to support organizations, it's much more appropriately that the city would reach out to the warming center, which actually does the undertaking job of making sure that not one person has to experience hypothermia or death on the coldest nights. That's that we need as a community to demand that the city interacts with the warming center, and that they don't is a clarion call. It's a red flag for basic intention around what they're really being holding themselves responsible for. Of course, we go round and around this. We step back from this, and you go, "Oh, of course." Crows cross your arms, and we go, "Yeah, we know what the city's up to. We can write this script every fucking year." But I'm trying to build a different.
Different vision. Right. Let me ask regarding awareness. The people that are supporting you, you're the folks who've been supporting the different projects you've been involved with: Sanctuary Village, Warming Center, 24-hour, or I should say, day and night storage.
Yeah.
Are they up in arms, concerned about this? Have you heard much from them, indicating that they want to put more energy into this, given the fact that. There's going to be, for example, no winter shelter other than, I guess, folks in their vehicles have safer places to park, maybe,
Yeah. Our core supporters are completely awesome. They don't keep themselves politicized on these issues. I'm writing a volunteer and supporter awareness email today to the Google groups that might show up in your inbox. I don't know if you're – I might have removed you from those.
Yeah, send it to me.
But additionally, so what's true is my board and primary and secondary circles of support completely support our work, and I don't have to usually. But let me say so that we're in a funding lull. I'm forced to raise money for the storage program immediately, and then go straight into the pre-winter fundraising for Warming Center. So that's all. You can imagine that I'm going to double down now and ask for ever more if we are going to be the last organization standing that actually can call itself a cold weather shelter. And the question is, we're reaching out to AFC, Salvation Army, and I'm actually going to be, believe it or not, reaching out to the city of Santa Cruz and the county to see how they can see themselves supporting in some way the Warming Center to expand capacity, because we're going to need additional spaces. We might have to open two spaces at once in Santa Cruz. I have to hire a site manager now, three-quarter time, and then additionally, I need more volunteers and just more funding. So, but besides that, I have good news for you. I wrote a grant 6 months ago for the Warming Center for something called Physical Mobility and Mental Health Challenges Capacity Increase. That means we're the only program in the county that says we put a priority on people with physical mobilities. That means we assert that if you don't put a priority on them, you'll see that they become the lowest priority, which is why we have a city with wheelchairs and walkers through the winter on the sidewalk streets and in Watsonville. So we're trying to change that and demand that all programs put a priority. And then we wrote a grant to Kaiser and got a grant to help us support us in that work. So now we can actually, we've been doing that unfunded, which is impossible. It's crazy that you can look at the photographs of the Watsonville Warming Center that we've been staffing with 5, 6, 7 walkers in wheelchairs. Why aren't they down the street at the Salvation Army? Because they don't welcome them. They don't have you have to get up a set of stairs to get into the shower there. Their bunks are all smashed together, so somebody in a walker can't even access. They don't reserve bunks for people at the low bunk level for people in wheelchair. You know, these are easy things to design. You and I would do. You know, any rational thinking person could design improve design factors in these programs in 5 minutes.
How big a grant did you get yourself?
$20,000.
And.
That's going to help me with a salary.
Uh-huh.
Not me. I'm going to hire somebody. I won't get any money. That helps us improve the wheelchair lift on our shuttle. It helps us spend more time and slow down and make sure that we can reach out and serve people in wheelchairs and with mental health capacity. That's the big one too. Mental health. That's a huge umbrella. What does that look like? But that's going to help me hire somebody specifically and make sure that, you know, when we're open, we're going to make sure that everybody in a wheelchair, a walker, has a mental health issue, knows that we're open, and has easy access to the program. And I hope you agree that that's a good thing.
It doesn't sound like a bad thing to me. anyway, Brent, I'm gonna roll, but I'll give you a minute to finish up if there's anything you want to add.
Yeah, you know, I have a hard time with my emotions right now. City manager Martin Bernal was crossing the intersection, and I literally 2 hours ago yelled loudly at him in public, said, 60, a reduction of 56 shelter beds in the wintertime? What do you have to say for that, Martin Bernal? Come on! And I was, you know, challenging him.
Oh, you did, Robert, like, you did Robert Norse there, Brandon.
Yeah, and so I had to, then immediately Sibley Simon was standing right in front of me, and I was like, Sibley, I'm freaking out. And I like Sibley. We don't have similar agendas, although we're trying to serve a similar population at times. But, and he really slowed down and provided some listening for me. You know, he was actually a friend in that moment and really, really agreed with me and just said, you know, it's okay.
Tell listeners who Sibley Simon is. I don't.
Sibley Simon is the accountant of Homeless Service Center. He's also the man behind the man behind the man at 180-2020. He actually founded 180-180. He's a tech millionaire many times over who, in his retirement, has tried to improve homelessness in Santa Cruz, and now he's going to become a low-income housing developer with New Way Homes, and he's up in lots of stuff.
I'm going to leave it there, Brent, but I encourage people who want more information to give you a call at 234-9848. Am I right on that?
234-9848. And warmingcenterprogram@gmail.com, warmingcenterprogram.com. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it.
Well,
a therapy session for me.
Yeah, good, good. I'll put you on my bill list.
Yes, please.
You take care, man.
Later.
Bye-bye.
From malnutrition, and I say that we don't want. cool.